What's up, everyone? Welcome to Mavs Film Room Spaces here on Thursday, February 8th. It's around 9:08 p.m. Central Time. Today was the trade deadline. Big news for the Mavericks. They acquired Daniel Gafford and P.J. Washington. Of course, the thing that just happened right now was the Mavericks got their third consecutive victory tonight against the New York Knicks in Madison Square Garden, 122-108. Mavericks played a very shorthanded Knicks team, but the Mavericks were able to get their third consecutive win for the first time in literally a month. Over these last three games in the Eastern Conference road trip, the Mavs have shown some signs of life. Luka Doncic had 39 points today to go along with 8 rebounds and 11 assists. Kyrie Irving had 16 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. Josh Green chipped in himself with 15 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists. Derek Jones Jr. in what figures to be his last game starting for the foreseeable future had 18 points, 5 rebounds, and 3 assists, including 7 of 7 from the free throw line. And then Tim Hardaway Jr., being the sixth man star that he's been all year, had 19 points on 5 of 10 from 3, 2 rebounds, and 2 assists. So great win for the Mavericks. I mean, they just took care of business against the Knicks, who have been one of the best teams in the league this year, but unfortunately were missing a large portion of their roster. But we didn't come here to talk too much about the game. I think we came here to talk about the Mavericks' big trade deadline acquisitions of Daniel Gafford and P.J. Washington the Wizards and Hornets, respectively.
You done with your SNL monologue?
I was about to introduce you, bro. Vinay, how's it going, man? How are you feeling today?
Man, I was on Twitter from 10 to 2 at work, so I didn't get a lot of work done, but it was a great day otherwise.
For fear of my employment, I cannot admit to the same thing, but I'm just kidding. It was an unproductive day, I think, for most NBA fans, but a great one for the Mavericks.
Let's start off with the trades. What do you think about what they spent, like pick swap to OKC, which, I mean, I think most people in the NBA would think Oklahoma City is going to be better than Dallas in 2028, and then you do a pick swap to get the first round pick that you immediately ship off. And then the other trade where you trade a top two protected in 2027 for P.J. Washington. What do you think about those two prices for the players they got?
Well, I guess let's talk about the players first, because I think that's probably the most important thing. But obviously, it's impossible to ignore the context, like you said, of what they gave up. So, I mean, starting with Daniel Gafford, I mean, I think it's safe to say that we have been fans of Daniel Gafford for a long time. And I think a lot of Mavs fans have too. He's a guy that's going to give the Mavericks good depth behind Derek Lively, and he'll be more than capable of starting on the occasion that they need to if Derek Lively is hurt or can't play for whatever reason. And he's on a good contract. He's only 25 years old, and that instantly gives them one of the best backup centers in the league, I would say. So I think to be able to get him for Rashawn Holmes, who, you know, the Mavericks acquired using their trade exception during the draft. Of course, like you said, they traded a 2028 pick swap to Oklahoma City, who then sent a first-round pick to Washington for Daniel Gafford. I mean, obviously, you know, anytime you see something with draft capital, it makes you a little bit nervous. But, you know, 2028 is 4 years from now. I think as long as Luka Doncic is a Maverick and as long as he's healthy, that figures to be, not a great pick and not one that I think the Mavericks, you know, would rely on to build.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people that were skeptical of the moves they made. They kind of pointed out that, 2027, 2028, those are the 2 years where Luka can be a free agent. But, I mean, this might sound too optimistic, but even if Luka wanted to leave, like, after this contract, I still feel like he's going to sign a Supermax after that with us. Like, that just makes the most financial sense. Like, he wouldn't go to – like, we're not just going to lose him for nothing is my point. At least I hope not.
Yeah, I mean, in this day and age in the league, like, even if a player is trying to plan their exit strategy, it makes more sense to re-sign with their existing team. They can get way more money that way.
So, I'm higher on Josh Green than I think a lot of us at Mavs Film Room are. Like, I'm really stoked that they kept
him. Hey, I'm starting to buy in. I'm starting to buy
in. I know. Cyberbullying works. No, I'm kidding. But with Josh Green, like, after the trade last year, he kind of had that dip, especially after Justin Holiday replaced him in the starting lineup. That's why I put out that tweet off the account. Like, I just want to see him stick in the starting lineup. Don't mess with it. It's just he's a player that just thrives off confidence, and he's playing confidently right now. You don't want to mess with that. I really, really hated when Jason Kidd messed with it last year with Justin Holiday against the Lakers on that
yeah,
one.
That was one the beginning
infamous
of
the Sunday. Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
So I'm rolling out Luka, Kyrie, Josh Green, PJ, and if Lively is probably not going Saturday, so if the two guys can play, I'm probably starting both of them on Saturday.
Yeah. We got Zach and Rohan up here, but before we bring them up, I just want to ask. Well, I want to address the other player that the Mavericks acquired today, PJ Washington from the Charlotte Hornets, and he's been a guy that the Mavericks fans have been clamoring for since the summer when they were trying to sign one of those restricted free agents, Grant Williams, Matisse Thybulle, PJ Washington. Like, those are all the guys that I think were sort of within their range. It obviously didn't happen over the summer, but clearly it did now. The Mavericks sent Grant Williams, Seth Curry, and a 2027 first-round pick that's top two protected to Charlotte in exchange for PJ Washington, who, you know, is a versatile forward, will give the Mavericks a real four with some length, and they won't have to play as undersized as they used to. Vinay, what did you think about that trade?
Which one, PJ?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be honest. I don't watch a lot of Hornets basketball games. So, like what I see from PJ Washington, just from what people talk about him and all that, like, I'm a fan. I'm not going to give you, like, this full scouting report on PJ Washington because I don't want to mislead everyone. But, I mean, just in terms of size and what he has, like, skills-wise with ball handling at that position, and, I mean, hopefully he shoots a little bit better here. But when you're playing with Luka and Kyrie, you're going to get open threes most of the game. So I would expect his shooting numbers to go up. He's never played on a winning basketball team before. That's like I think we're all super optimistic about what the fit's going to be, but it's just the fact. Like, he's been on the Hornets his whole career. So unfortunately for him, he hasn't been in a lot of winning playoff games. He's never played or winning basketball situations. He's never played in a playoff game. Gafford's only played in 5 playoff games, I believe. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys fit with what we got going on. And we don't have a lot of time to get everyone kind of acclimated together. There is an adjustment period. Like, as much as we like the basketball fits or we theorize about them, like, they still got to mesh together before the playoffs start.
No, absolutely. I think Gafford's fit is going to be a little bit more seamless because we know exactly what he brings to this team, what exactly his role is going to be. PJ Washington, I think, is one that might take a little bit more time. You know, it's the first time the Mavericks really do have a versatile four like him. So, you know, they got 30 games to figure it out before the playoffs, and hopefully the Mavericks will be able to use these trades to, you know, to boost them and catapult them into the top six of the
West. All right, man, enough of you, us talking. Let's hear what Rohan's
got to say.
Zach, I know you, Rohan, you're there too.
Zach was at Madison Square Garden tonight, I believe.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, I want to hear his takes just on the energy.
Hey, guys,
Are you on the subway?
Are you on the metro right now?
Oh, shit.
We lost him.
Around the arena. No. I'm walking. It was good, man. Good Mavs presence. Not the same percentage-wise as in Brooklyn. It was pretty funny. A guy in the stands tried to start a Luka MVP chant here, and he got booed. And so it was pretty funny compared to what happened in Brooklyn a couple nights ago. The last thing I thought was interesting at the end of the game, like, J. Kidd and Spencer Dinwiddie were just, like, talking a lot. And they were all like, yeah, it was pretty, like, I mean, not, like, make of that what you will. But, like, at the end, like, J. Kidd and Spence and JB were, you know, Mark, I think there's a video on Twitter of Mark. But, yeah, Spencer was there sitting behind the bench. The vibes just seemed kind of good tonight, if I'm being honest. Not to be too simplistic. I want to get one quick thing out of the way about the trades. I think this is very simple because, like, Jay, you know how I feel. I've gone a little back and forth, and it really comes down to this. If Luka's on our roster in 2028, it literally doesn't matter, and it's a good deal. And if he's not, we're screwed anyway. So I know it's easier to rebuild when you own your own picks so you don't end up like the Nets. But if you're thinking, if you're playing from a position of fear, like, would the Bucks have made the trade for Drew Holiday thinking that way? No, they wouldn't have. But because they made the trade, they won a title. Giannis stayed. So I just firmly disagree with all these people that are like, the Mavs gave up too much. It's too much draft capital. I still think it was a lot to give up, and that's why I've gone back and forth. But I think fundamentally you have to bet on Luka, and you have to bet on building a title contender, and these things take time. What I don't like is how quickly we gave up on Grant Williams, just on principle, to be as hyped as he was about a guy 6 months ago who we had been like basically thirsting for, and he's gone now. Like, that kind of sucks. But in general, I'm fine with the trades, and I think they could really help us.
Yeah, well said. I will kind of push back on the Grant Williams thing, because I understand the principle, but I mean, he was one of the least effective starters in the league in his time with the Mavericks, and I think the leash that he was given had to do with the Mavs' lack of personnel. But I think this trade, especially PJ Washington, I think he's proven in his career. I haven't seen enough of this film. I guess we'll see it pretty soon. But I think he's proven that he can do a lot of the things that we projected Grant Williams to kind of grow into. So I'm quietly optimistic, he's a plus defender, all that. But kind of zooming out a little bit, I get the same feeling around this trade as I got during the Caron Butler Brendan Haywood trade. It just kind of feels like the same magnitude of a move. Not to say that the Mavericks are going to win the championship next year, but I think this puts them in a position where next year they can be solidly contenders, or at least dark horse contenders, because a lot of those gaps are gone. Gafford has been talked about by Mavs fans forever. I, for one, did not think that we would be ending the season with Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively as our front court rotation. Like, I think we really need to, like, Mavs fans, we need to really give Nico credit on that, because we wanted one or the other, and now one is going to be the backup for the other, right? The other concern was Derek's been asked to do way too much this season. So this makes me quietly optimistic, and I do think this immediately raises the ceiling for this team this year. And as soon as this offseason, it really takes one, like, tertiary piece in order to get this team to solid contention.
Yeah, I think those are all really great points, and I don't disagree with the pushback. Honestly, I think it's a principle thing, me trying to give it time. But obviously, if something's not working, it's not working. To your point about this feels like the Wizards trade with Caron Butler, I want to agree with you. At the same time, I was like 12 when that trade happened, and try to think about how I felt at the time was just a lot. I think
he's calling. He's feel calling a lot more you. He's now. Calling you a geezer, Rohan.
No, I'm not. I just think like I think we as Mavs fans just need to stay measured as much as possible, because I think we always fluctuate one extreme or the other, and I'm very guilty of this. But I've been trying to rein myself in. I think these are all positives. But we need to keep perspective. Like, we're still pushing for the 5 seed here. I think we made up ground out of the play-in, but I don't still see us getting home court advantage in the first round.
Sure. Yeah, this season has also, sorry to interrupt, but quickly, this season has also been marred by a lot of injury issues. And
agreed.
We had major holes in our rotation for more than half the season on top of those injury issues, right? Luka and Kyrie didn't play a lot of games together. We've been depending on Derek Lively to do too much. So I want to go back and, I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit of an old soul. I remember that period of Mavs history before they won the championship pretty well, at least the discussion that was going around that trade. And I think this changes the ceiling about the same amount. So I think it's a good comparison. But
do you really think PJ? So I guess I actually remember watching Caron Butler a lot before that trade. So I remember being excited about it. I've just seen Twitter hype and some highlights of PJ Washington and the stats.
Caron was way more established when he got traded to the
Mavericks. That's my only thing. Like,
but maybe also Caron Butler
better than Brendan.
The league is also very different. Like, the league very on a team with Luka Doncic, you're not going to need a wing to be Caron Butler. Caron Butler was a pretty established scorer. He could do things himself. We don't need PJ Washington to do that. We have Luka and Kyrie, as well as Josh Green playmaking on as the third starter. So I just think the needs are different. I'm not making a very specific comparison in terms of their games, but this fills the gaps of the roster in very important ways.
So here's a question, Rohan. Would you have rather, because we're actually a bunch of Mavs fans at the game I was sitting by, would you have rather Maxey instead of Grant Williams, or are you glad that we gave up Grant Williams? Because it sounds like we didn't like Grant.
I mean, I wanted Grant to pan out. It's just like the one game I've seen him play in person this year was when they came to Crypto, and he had one of the worst three-point shooting nights I've ever seen a Mavericks wing have. And I truly believe he's better than that, but we didn't see it this season, and the stakes are way too high. We don't have Luka for 9 years, right?
I think Charlotte might have preferred Grant Williams over Maxey Kleber because,
of age, I mean.
Yeah, and also, Grant Williams was one of Charlotte's free agent targets over.
Yeah, they want him free agency, right? Yeah.
I don't want to knock the guy on the way out, whatever. But Grant Williams is just, it's crazy how unathletic he is. I hate to say it, but it's just, he's just really not that good of an
athlete. I mean, PJ Washington is a way different player than him.
Yeah, and I think his ball, PJ Washington's ball handling is better. He's just a better athlete. He's a longer athlete.
How do we feel about people saying, so one, I think John Hollinger was a little too harsh, but what are our counters or agreements with the criticisms of PJ Washington?
Can I go first?
Educate me, please.
Like I said earlier, I haven't seen enough. I'm not spending my time watching Hornets basketball games, admittedly, so I don't have the most knowledge of PJ Washington takes.
I think there's some level of credence to what John Hollinger was saying, because yes, PJ Washington has not played in a winning situation before. Like, all the tape that we have on him comes from his film in Charlotte, where there are times where he's clearly not motivated to go back and play defense. But if you look at him, like in the games against the Mavs, those two games against Charlotte at the end of last season that really just basically put the nail in our coffin, right? PJ Washington was engaged on both offense and defense. And I think that's the version that you're hoping that he'll be in Dallas.
Yeah, I would say, given what Grant was good at, I mean, Grant is just stronger. I haven't seen enough of PJ, but I think that'll be maybe the first thing that we notice. And we have yet to see how his shooting efficiency will be, right? But I've also heard from a lot of Hornets fans, because I was just doing a lot of research on Twitter today, that he's a sneakily good tertiary playmaker, and he just has good instincts as far as reading the floor, right? These are things that we just weren't seeing from Grant as much, or we weren't able to rely on him as much at that position. So I think the quiet optimism is good.
Who's the best ball handler we've had at that position before PJ? The 3-4 position.
Like all time or in the
Luka era? No, during the Luka era.
Gee.
Christian Wood, maybe? I don't know.
Good Lord.
I don't know. Maybe on, Christian Wood, but I think Maxey before the injury like 2 years ago was
Christian Wood. Yeah.
All right. Maybe I'm just hating.
Yes. So we haven't really had anyone of this kind of skill set, is my point. And we see a lot of times when people close out on our shooters, especially come playoff time, they just had an inability to attack the closeout or make something happen. I think on paper, it looks like PJ Washington's going to be able to do that more so than Dorian or Maxey in the past have been able to do.
I'm also kind of curious, not curious, but I'm kind of excited to see a starting lineup with Luka, Kyrie, Josh Green, and PJ, just because all four of those guys can pass pretty well. And especially if Derek is healthy, I think that's a very dangerous lineup, regardless of how effective of a scorer PJ Washington or Josh Green are in the playoffs.
That is a great point, actually. Very good point.
And one more, sorry, I was having some technical difficulties. One thing I wanted to add that's tangentially related is I'm happy we kept Josh, just on the same principle for Grant Williams, liking to now want to just give stuff time. Josh is only 23. To a lesser extent, I'm glad we're keeping Jaden. We're just giving these young guys who have shown flashes time rather than just throwing them out the door. I think I personally grappled with this a lot, thinking, would I rather give up Josh or the pick? And I think Josh has been very useful, and you're unlikely to, with those picks, obviously we wouldn't keep those picks to draft, but even just like the uncertainty of stockpiling picks to go make a big trade, I like Nico's resolve to try and keep Josh while still getting these deals done.
I mean, look, it's always better to have players who can contribute as opposed to the potential of players that could contribute. I mean, the 2027 pick that the Mavs sent out today is a 10th grader right now. You know, and that's not to say that those picks aren't important, but Josh Green is 22 years old. I think, like Vinay sort of said at the beginning, like, he's really starting to figure things out in terms of being more consistent. I mean, you would rather have that than the potential of being able to pick someone 3 years down the road who could maybe do that 3 years down that road, so 6 years from now, right? So I think it made a lot more sense for the Mavs to go the route of attaching a pick as opposed to trading one of their young guys. Go ahead, Vinay.
No, I don't really have much to add to that. I mean, I just want to see how it works. Like, I think we're all excited about it, at least for the most part, but we just have to see how they play together. And it's going to be an adjustment period, like I said, but I think the fan base should be excited about the moves they made. I think Nico did a good job. Maybe a little bit over aggressive in terms of what you gave up draft picks wise, but I mean, when Donnie Nelson and Nico and Haralabob give you nothing to really work with, you got to do some stuff. So
for sure, I got a couple more things to talk about with this trade. Feel free to chime in. I think one of the other aspects of this trade is just how it sort of recalibrates the depth chart on the Mavericks. It moves, it moves Derek Jones Jr. likely to the bench. I think it also allows Tim Hardaway Jr. to play more of a specialist role as opposed to being a guy who's consistently relied upon to bail the Mavericks offense out. I mean, now that you have PJ Washington on the team, he's a guy who's obviously capable of getting hot and scoring in bunches and scoring with more diversity as opposed to Tim Hardaway Jr. So now you can really use Tim as a sharpshooter. And Derek Jones Jr., I think, you know, he's been a really versatile player for the Mavericks. His athleticism, his off-the-dribble bounce has been really key for them this season, and now he'll be playing in a more appropriate role. So curious to get your guys' thoughts on, you know.
He looked great tonight, by the way, live. I know he looked good on TV, but Derek, as you guys know, there's also, you get a different element watching these guys live. Derek is so attentive on the defensive end, and even though he's more limited offensively, you can just see the intentionality of the guy trying to make an impact any way he can. And when you play with Luka, that's an intangible quality. That's a necessity to be in a successful lineup. So I just wanted to add that too.
Rohan, Vinay, you guys got anything?
I think you put it really well. Derek Jones Jr. has been extremely effective, especially in the early season. I don't know whether he was injured there or out for a little bit in the middle, but it's clear the Mavs were over-relying on him, right? And also, I don't believe that they have him signed for next year. Am I correct on that, Jay?
He's got one more year after this.
Okay. So,
is it Exum or Derek who... We don't have them for next year.
Jones is on a 1 year contract. So he's a free agent. No, Exum has another year on his contract.
That's what I thought. Wow. So I think the PJ move also, not only does it help the depth chart, I mean, that means going into the offseason, let's say worst case scenario, we lose DJJ. You really just have to fill in a gap of a bench wing four, right? Which is a lot easier to find for a team with the stakes of the Mavs. But yeah, that I don't have much to add on Derek Jones Jr. just because I think this is going to be better for him as well as THJ, but I don't think it necessarily changes their gameplay much.
How close are the Mavericks to being contenders, and how much does this raise their ceiling? Like, I don't think that they're contenders this year just purely off these trades. I do think it raises their ceiling, but curious to hear you guys' thoughts on
who am I supposed to be scared of in the West besides Denver? And I'll give the Clippers. I think the Clippers are going to be formidable. But besides those two teams, the Thunder are great, the Wolves are great. But even those two teams, I think playoff experience matters a lot. I really do. And I think the last two playoff run, or I know we missed the playoffs last year, but the Western Conference run for the Mavericks, I think, was going to be huge for them this year, just because like a lot of those players got playoff experience, like Maxey, Luka, Tim. Who else was on that team? Help me out. But a lot of those Thunder players, a lot of those haven't had a lot of playoff experience.
Dwight Powell.
Yeah, so I think what's playing in the Mavs' favor for definitely the rest of this year. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, besides those two teams, like I'm not really like terrified of anyone else in a playoff series. Like I'm not saying I'm going to pick us against everyone, but if you give me Luka, Kyrie, I'm not like terrified of anyone in a playoff series. Denver, I don't think we have any chance of beating.
No, I think that's a pretty rational read of it. Like I'm not shaking in my boots for anybody just because I think the Mavs have enough talent. But I think the ceiling, to answer Jay's question, really comes down to how good PJ Washington and Josh Green are come playoff time. Like Josh has been great this season, but the playoffs are different. The pace will slow down, and the whistle will not be the same, right? So if he can continue his aggression, I mean, he's been getting to the basket, playing way more effectively as an inside scorer, as well as hitting those threes. So we'll see how effective he is. And we have no idea how PJ Washington is going to fit in, regardless of what we tell you. So this season, I wouldn't say the Mavericks are contenders. I think, unfortunately, because half the season has passed, that's kind of unreasonable to say. I think next year, I'm giving them dark horse contention status. Like, I think the depth chart purely gives them that.
I think that's a fair assessment. I think they you know, if they can upgrade, if they can upgrade one more spot in the rotation, obviously as many as they can, I think one minimum could get them into contention status. I mean, assuming that PJ Washington works out the way that we think it will here in Dallas. I think final topic that I had, unless Vinay, you got anything on that?
Please go ahead, sir.
Final topic was Spencer Dinwiddie, who, as Zach mentioned and as we saw, was at the game tonight at MSG. He was awfully friendly with a lot of players on the Mavericks, a lot of guys that he knows, Luka, Mark Cuban, Jason Kidd. Do we think that he is coming to Dallas, and what does that give us if that's the case?
So I think... if I remember correctly, I don't think he was too enthused about the trade. I think he understood, but I don't think he loved being traded last year. That aside, I really think it's a two-horse race. I think it's going to be us or the Lakers, and that's where I stop analyzing. I think it comes down to what Spencer really wants. If he wants familiarity, I think he'll come to the Mavs. If he wants probably a bigger role, he'll go to the Lakers. And I think it's kind of that simple. And it's just a matter of what Spencer wants and what we're willing to give him.
Yeah, I don't have much to add on Spencer Dinwiddie just because we've actually seen him in a Mavs uniform. But I think it'll help on the injury issues. Like, if the rotation is hampered for whatever reason in the playoffs or, you know, in the future, if he does end up being a Maverick through the bio process, then I think that's his biggest boon.
I believe Spencer Dinwiddie will be a Maverick, and I presented my case above. The Lakers can only offer 1 point. What does that say?
1.5.
Yeah, 1.5 million. We can offer 5.4. I'm just going to, you know, money's usually the differentiating factor for most of these cases anyway. So on top of all that
Doesn't it come out of their contract? If they're bought out.
But he didn't get bought out. He got waived.
Ah, yeah. Okay.
So on top of all that, and Spencer having his best, he played his best basketball. He was a Maverick, and seems like both parties are interested in a reunion. I think he's going to be here.
I do believe that too. I think he's just, his career here in Dallas has been so vastly different from when he's played elsewhere. I think he still has good relationships with Jason Kidd, with Luka, Nico Harrison, Mark Cuban. I think that'll play a factor. And he probably will have an opportunity here to contribute. So I think the Mavs have a good shot of landing.
And And I know we have Luka and Kyrie, but this team has needed, like, I still think we've needed a third ball handler. Like, when one of those two guys are out and one of them has to sit on the bench during the game because they can't play the whole game when the other one's sitting, like, it's just pretty evident how lacking we are in that department. Like, Jaden Hardy's just not there yet. Josh Green, you don't want being your main ball handler. So, like, in terms of that, just having a little bit more of a floor with your bench units. I know Spencer Dinwiddie's been pretty bad since he's been in Brooklyn, but I expect a little bit of a bounce back. And yeah, I think it's a good fit too.
He was really bad with Washington before the Mavs traded for him in 2022, and he somehow turned into a 40% three-point shooter here. And, you know, I think with Exum, you know, Exum figured to be the third ball handler, but it's just he has not proven that he can stay healthy. So I think, you know, reducing his minutes to like 15 to 20 or, you know, 10 to 20 is probably best, as opposed to pushing him to 25 to 30 minutes every night. So Dinwiddie could certainly slide in there and help.
And even if Dinwiddie comes, Exum's still going to be needed because Josh Green might have a bad playoff game or two, you know, and where he might not be able to stay on the floor. Let's hope it doesn't get to that, but let's just say it does. Then you can have Dante Exum as a little bit of insurance in that scenario.
I saw an interesting quote just now from Luka in the post-game press conference. He was talking about Daniel Gafford, and he said that he's wanted a backup center for 3 years. So Daniel Gafford appears to be that player. I thought that was very interesting that he said that.
I guess he wanted a backup center for 3 years. What about a starting center?
I mean, I guess he got the starting center this year, but
I mean, that's like great. I just like, you know, Luka wanted help last year. Luka wanted Grant Williams. Luka wanted, you know, Luka needs to stop whining to the refs. Like, it's even more infuriating in person because you're just watching him the whole time. There's no cutaways. Sorry, that's unnecessary for the conversation, but that was
you're good.
Really,
yeah, that
annoying.
Was kind of a tangent. On the backup center conversation, no hate on any of our guys, but it'll be good not to rely on Dwight Powell for the seventh year in a row.
That is true. And I think Dwight Powell is a fine third string center that can come in and play a few minutes here and there. I mean, the way the Mavs, going back to Dinwiddie, the way the Mavs are talking right now, it seems like they got him. I mean, Jason Kidd in the post-game press conference said, you know, anytime you can add two, maybe three players. Nico Harrison said that we had three needs today and we accomplished them. Unless the third need was acquiring second-round picks, that definitely, you know, foreshadows something. So we'll see. I would love to welcome Spencer Dinwiddie back to Dallas. I think the Mavs fan base got a lot of love for him. And I expect him to bounce back here if we do sign him. All right. Well, I don't know. Do we have anything else to discuss? I feel like we hit on most of the points. Vinay, Roland, Zach.
Quickly before I go, I want to say Nico Cooks.
Nico Cook today, definitely.
Give me health, and I'm higher on this team than I think a lot of people are.
Zach?
Was Rohan talking? I don't know if I...
No, he dropped off.
Yeah, you know, I think it's... you know, I've been fighting off different people in conversations. I myself have been fluctuating, but I think if we just keep in mind that we aren't a contender right now, but we're trying to build to one. The fact that you get a guy that we believe will fill a hole and is on the age timeline... And we didn't, despite what people were saying, we didn't totally empty the war chest to upgrade. These things take time. And just to keep that in mind, like, the Nuggets didn't win a title for like 3 or 4 years after trading for Aaron Gordon, partly because guys were hurt, COVID, all these different things. So I think just keeping that in mind is really important. And that Luke is only, what, 24, 25? He's about to turn 25. So cautiously optimistic here.
Yeah, I think an underrated part of all these moves is that the Mavericks have kind of solidified a core of players that has a chance to establish some, you know, some continuity and consistency, because none of them are particularly old. And hopefully now the wins follow, because I think, you know, the talent is there in place. And now they have, you know, the opportunity to make some margin moves in the future and hopefully solidify themselves as a contender next year. So, yeah. All right. Well, if you guys don't have anything else, then I think we'll stop here. So appreciate everyone for tuning in. Appreciate you, Vinay, Zach, Rohan, who dropped off now. Thanks for coming up and sharing your thoughts. We'll be back with another episode of Mavs Film Room Spaces soon. So keep it here. There's going to be a lot more to come in the next coming days and weeks. Hopefully.
Yeah, and make that film, Jay. You better be making film.
Hey, man, I'm trying.
I'm going to hold you to it. All right.
Keep holding me to it.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Zach. Have a good night. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Go Mavs. We'll talk to you soon.